Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, fully refreshed, ready for the new season. It's September the 1st. The NFL season is just a few short days away, which means Jeff Reinbold, my usual partner from Sky Sports, these fans of the NFL around the world are getting excited, Jeff.
Yeah, everybody's excited, and I'm really happy that, you know, you've done your Shady McCoy routine. You've been on, you know, had a hamstring pull for these last 2 weeks, so we haven't been able to have the podcast, so we're back in business, baby.
We are, we're back. I'm rested. I've been to see Mickey Mouse. I've watched some preseason stuff. I'm not going to say that's Mickey Mouse, but some of it might have been. And there's been a few injuries, Jeff. I mean, we'll catch up with injuries around the NFL while I've been away, including our producer, Nick Pike. He stood next to me. He's got his hand in a bandage. I think he got angry that he was doing the dishes, and he just started smashing glasses up. So even Nick Pike's in trouble at the moment in the preseason.
I think we need to get him in the program, and his anger management issues we've got to get that under control. You know, you just got to understand he represents the National Football League, and you just can't be out, you know, throwing glass around.
He has been a problem child, as we said. So, Jeff, I watched some of the preseason games, and you know, the one that I saw some tremendous improvement from Blake Bortles of the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think Ryan Tannehill's had a really strong preseason with the Miami Dolphins. Jameis Winston was kind of up and down early. I saw him in a game against the Vikings. He took an absolute beating behind his offensive line, but he seems to have bounced back nicely. But the preseason, you know, it's still that debate, isn't it, about the value of it. I mean, we'll get onto the injuries in a few minutes' time, but I just saw this past weekend, you know, this is supposed to be the dress rehearsal weekend. And yes, people like Tony Romo played, although he only attempted 8 passes. Matthew Stafford played quite a bit for Detroit. But Aaron Rodgers didn't play at all for the Green Bay Packers. Drew Brees only played one series for the New Orleans Saints. So this is the big dress rehearsal weekend. If these big name players are starting to pull out of this game, what does that say about the preseason?
Well, I think it's what it says is the coaches are really concerned about those critical players, that they don't want to expose them to any more hits than they have to. I mean, I've got the NFL injury list in front of me right now. And I mean, it's a long one at every team. And what's concerning to me as you look through this is there's so many guys that are critical players that, you know, that they need to have healthy during the season. You know, this is one of the questions that you always have to ask yourself as a coach. Is it worth the risk to have the player in there in a, you know, a situation where, you know, it's not a controlled environment like practice? And the minus plus of it is for young players, they need the game reps, particularly a quarterback. I watched the Packers-Eagles game last night, and I was really impressed with Huntley, the young quarterback from Green Bay, and you know, you know that as a young quarterback, that may be the only real work he's going to get now until, you know, and God forbid, you know, Rodgers gets hurt. But how do you develop players at that position? Because they need time. They need those game reps. And, you know, our game is you know, requires a lot of people to play so that those, you know, critical players at quarterback and some of the other positions can develop. And so you've got to have guys out there, you know. I think the league has done some good things in that they allow you to hold on to players a little bit longer, which, you know, lessens the reps on some of the, you know, really quality guys. But, you know, I look in Buffalo, and like I was teasing you about, Shady McCoy's not had, you know, very many reps at all in training camp, and I'm sure Rex doesn't feel like he needs him to. And whether it's a phantom hamstring or it's a real hamstring, you know, why would you expose that guy to those kinds of hits? There are other guys that seem to take another approach. I watched Chip play a lot of his better frontline players a lot in the game. And, you know, with really kind of apparently no fear that they're going to, you know, get dinged. But, man, oh, man, you look at the injury list, and it is a long one.
So, Jeff, from the business side of it, I understand from the football side there that you as a coach, you have the prerogative to take your players out if you don't feel LeSean McCoy needs preseason game work. Adrian Peterson hasn't played in a preseason for years. And now if Aaron Rodgers doesn't need to play, we know what he can do. But should a fan be charged a full price for a ticket in a preseason game? I mean, when you buy a season ticket package in the United States, it's 10 games. It's 8 regular season games plus 2 preseason games. Now, I was in Florida on holiday I had the chance to either go and watch Jacksonville against Pittsburgh or Tampa Bay against Cincinnati. And I chose not to do either. I chose to watch parts of them on TV. And I'll even admit I only watched parts of them because it was a tough watch. And so, you know, maybe we should be looking at if these preseason games aren't going to go away, and we don't know if they will until, you know, the whole 16-game, 18-game regular season debate gets resolved. Should there be something done about the pricing and the fact that these are lumped into season ticket packages?
You know, you're asking that. That's a really tough question for me because I love the preseason games.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, in a lot of ways, I love them more than the regular season games because you get an opportunity to see so many players, so many young players. And from a football coach's standpoint, you know, I've been poring over the NFL preseason games here in our offices in extra time, I guess is the way you describe it, because you want to see things that they're doing schematically. You want to look at young players that, you know, are trying to, the guys that we've evaluated through the draft and talked about in, you know, the draft pre-shows and see how they're coming along. And then those second and third year players who haven't really, you know, ascended to starters roles, maybe guys that, you know, will be up here. And just, you know, to me, I love watching football. So I'm a tough, you know, that's a tough ask for me. But for the average fan, I can understand how they would be frustrated because you pay to see the stars. And the stars, frankly, are not going to be in the game very much in these, you know, meaningless preseason games.
All right, let's take a look at some of the news from around the NFL. And really, that's all we're gonna focus on that today. We'll have a catch-up, and then we'll preview the season next week. So we're going to catch up with the news, looking, there's been a lot of it. Look at some of the preseason action that caught our eye and take your questions in the mailbag. Tom Brady versus the NFL rumbles on, and no settlement agreement was reached this week. So Brady's status for the season opener against Pittsburgh on September the 10th remains in doubt. We'll leave that there because no real news to report on that. There has been news with regard to the British players. Menelik Watson, sadly, Jeff, is out for 6 months with an Achilles injury. This is absolutely gutting for me. I know that Menelik has worked so hard. He was in even better shape than ever before. I know from spending time with him over the summer, he was very excited to play for Jack Del Rio. But he is a determined and a strong character. I think that's how he got to the NFL in the first place. And, you know, he's vowed to come back bigger and stronger and better. But it's a tough blow. They always are hard, aren't they, these injuries in the preseason? Because, I don't know, I mean, there shouldn't be any more upsetting than an injury in week one or week two. But it feels so frustrating when a player's season hasn't even got going and it's over.
And he's the kind of guy I was talking about, you know, that player who's, you know, in now second, third year in the league and ascending into starter status. He's comfortable now. He's gone through. I was thinking about Menelik this morning, all he's been through in the last 10 years of his football life, you know, coming to the United States, you know, becoming a football player, going to Florida State, being drafted, going through the growth of a rookie offensive lineman in the league, then a coaching change. And, you know, he was just at the point where you feel him starting to settle in and really understand the business and understand what his techniques were. And it's tough because, you know, you lose a guy that is a potential starter in preseason, and offensive linemen are just so hard to find. So I feel for Jack, and I feel for Menelik. I feel that, you know, it's tough. He's a battler. He'll come back from it. You know, these Achilles tendon injuries, which, interestingly enough, I think since we've gone to the new kind of AstroTurf, you start to see, or the new kind of artificial surface, you seem to see more of that Achilles tendon thing. That was never a big injury, but more and more you see that, and I think that's something that the Players Association and, you know, and the team doctors around the league really need to look at, because, you know, that's an old man's injury. You know, that's a 50-year-old guy's injury. That's not a, you know, a young athlete's injury. So, unfortunate, but I'm sure Menelik will come back and the doctors will repair that Achilles tendon and he'll get on to his rehab.
Yeah, it was a bad weekend for the Brits because Lawrence Okoye, the British defensive lineman of the San Francisco 49ers, was among the first round of roster cuts made by the Niners. Now, today, Tuesday, September the 1st, is the day that the NFL teams have to get down from 90 players to 75. And then this coming weekend, that drops from 75 to 53. And that's the 53 that teams will carry during the regular season. And they set their practice squads at that time. I've mentioned before, Jeff, I was with Jim Tomsula just before I went away on my vacation. We had breakfast together in Santa Clara. he was very high on Lawrence Okoye. He was gushing praise about how in one of their scrimmages he chased down Colin Kaepernick from behind. But looks like Lawrence hasn't made it out of those first round of cuts. Could still make the practice squad, I guess. Is still eligible for the practice squad, but nonetheless, this is a blow.
Yeah, it's a blow, but I think it's one of those things that you was not, you know, isn't a shock. Certainly, yep. I mean, he's got a lot of football to catch up on, and I think that he is such an incredible specimen, such a tremendous athlete, that he's going to find himself with somebody during the course of this season. You know, those players have a specific amount of time that they can be on practice squads in the National Football League, and he's a guy, because of his background, because of his athleticism, and because of the fact that, you know, you just don't get guys walking around that can do the things that he can do physically. I would not be surprised at all if he's not back on the practice squad, either in San Francisco or somewhere around the league, because he is a, you know, again, he's a guy that you would invest that kind of time in, because his physical gifts are so great.
Yeah, because even if he was on the practice squad this year, Jeff, this would be his third year in the NFL. That's still only what, you know, some of those guys who come out early from college play, and then there's no high school stuff in there either. So he is still learning the game. I know Lawrence said, you know, there's less thinking and a lot more doing now in his game, and he feels much more comfortable. But, you know, it's still a matter of fact that he doesn't have the years under his belt.
No, and I think one of the things that you may see, and this is, you know, one of those kinds of deals that happens on occasion, is he may show up here. You know, there may be a team up here that will bring him in and say, the game's it's a two down game up here. You know, it's basically second and 10 when you go on the field. Mm-hmm. So there are less things that you see in the run game. And it's usually the run game that is toughest for a young D lineman to deal with, because of all the different schemes, and, you know, you're getting hit from all different directions, and, you know, the backfield sets move. And when it comes down to what he can do, which is rush the passer, get up the field, this would be a natural kind of a bridge for him. And, you know, he's still not at an age where, you know, with that body that you say, you know, doesn't have a lot of hits on him. He's not played, you know, football since he was 10 years old, and, you know, he's hit out. And so, again, I think that somebody will bring him in, somebody will work him out, and he'll sign and be on somebody's practice roster. If not, I would not be surprised if he's not going to play he's not going to play in the Canadian League.
All right, so a couple of other first-round cuts, Jeff. Oakland cut running back Trent Richardson, and the Bills cut running back Fred Jackson. So your thoughts on both of those, and really with Jackson, you just alluded to it there. LeSean McCoy has, hamstring injury, has barely been on the field in recent weeks. Here is, what, albeit one of the older running backs in the NFL, but certainly from speaking to Buffalo Bills players, and I spent a lot of time with Eric Wood at the center in the offseason, certainly one of the smartest running backs in the NFL. Eric mentioned that, you know, Fred Jackson always seems to make his offensive linemen look smart because he makes the right read. So your thoughts on those two, because Richardson is in a downward spiral, it seems, but I was surprised by Fred Jackson. I thought he would have a role to play with the Bills.
Well, I think, you know, you're looking at two separate issues with these two guys. Trent Richardson, frankly, is a disappointment. You know, here's a guy, first-round draft choice, that couldn't get it done a couple different places. And, you know, just sad, but that's the fact of the matter. You know, he didn't have the explosiveness in the NFL that he exhibited as a college back at Alabama, and you know, the time just ran out on him. And, you know, on the other hand, you know, you go to the Buffalo situation, and gosh almighty, Fred Jackson, Mr. Buffalo Bill. And, you know, being this close to Buffalo, 45 minutes away, you know, you obviously hear an awful lot about the Bills and how they're – and he is one of those guys that was everything that the NFL wants.
He's a fan favorite,
great guy,
wasn't he, Jeff?
Yeah, great guy off the field, always accessible to the fans. Took Buffalo and you know, Buffalo's not an easy place to, you know, to play in terms of the weather's bad. It's not a big city. A lot of players don't like it there. He seemed to just embrace the whole experience of being a Buffalo Bill, was always accessible with the media, as you said, a fan favorite and a very, very good back. But at his age and what he costs against the salary cap, I could see this one coming. That one doesn't shock me. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a number of running backs over there right now that are, you know, not just Shady, but Bryce Brown and Booby Dixon and, you know, younger guys that, you know, Carlos Williams. Those are younger guys and cheaper guys. And, you know, it was going to be whether Fred was going to be able to be a big enough situational back and special teams player in order for them to hang on to him for another year. Plus, you go into the fact that it's a new regime.
Yes.
And everybody wants their guys. And, you know, frankly, Fred Jackson wasn't their guy.
You know, he's going to end up in New England, right?
Well,
it just,
you know,
feels
what?
Like one of them.
Surprised. I think there's enough tread left on the tires. And, you know, he's a quality guy that's going to be a great guy in your locker room. And, you know, he is a special teams guy. He'll do whatever role he's asked to do. And, you know, again, if Belichick brought him in, that would not shock me in the least at all.
All right,
he's a good pass protector, good running back, you know, still not flashy, but still a very solid player.
All right, let's have a look at some quarterback news then, because there were big, big headlines regarding the quarterback positions in Washington and Buffalo with teams deciding on their starter. So it looks like RG3's future is in doubt in Washington after Jay Gruden named Kirk Cousins the starter for 2015. Now, Jeff, RG3 benchings have become an annual thing, but not they're normally in the season, not in the preseason. What do you make of this move, and why do you think they've done it? Because Gruden they've gone head to head, haven't they? A bit, Gruden and Griffin.
Well, I think this is one of those, you know, Mexican standoffs, as we say in the United States, and it's a situation where it's either going to be RG3 or it's going to be Jay Gruden, I'm afraid. Now, what would concern me if I was Mrs. Gruden is the fact that, you know, the owner has weighed in that, you know, they would, the word is that they would like to get rid of, Gruden would like to get rid of him, and the owner won't let him do that. And so that means that the owner still got his hands in it, and I don't know what contractually, you know, Gruden's situation is in regards to player, you know, player control over player personnel. But when the owner wants a guy and you don't want that guy, you better make the right decision. Because if you make the wrong decision, you know, that's usually not very good for the coach.
Jeff, so just stop you there, Jeff, and then you can carry on with your opinions. But just on that and on the contract situation with RG3 and talking about the ownership and maybe the coach being on a different page, just 4 months ago, the Redskins picked up RG3's fifth-year option for 2016, which is worth $16 million. That pretty much makes him hard to trade, I think, because is anyone going to trade for somebody they know they're going to have to pay $16 million in 2016 who hasn't proved it yet? So there's ownership handing him an extension in 2016. Not 4 months later, the coach is sticking him on the bench.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations that we talk all the time when we talk about certain, you know, organizations in the league where it doesn't seem like management and coaching are on the same page, and that's kind of been a problem in Washington for years. The owner is very proactive with his team, which he has the right to be because he signs all the checks. And, you know, it was interesting. Gruden made the comment that, you know, people try and paint us as dysfunctional. And, you know, he was kind of defending the decision a little bit. But, you know, how could you not be painted as dysfunctional? One from the coaching side and one from the management side or owner side about the most prominent player in the organization. And, you know, and that's RG3. So I think this is going to be an interesting one for all of us to watch play out.
Do you think ownership in Washington are still buying that whole, we gave up too much for RG3 to give up on him? Because at some point you've got to move on from that. You've got to, you know, because otherwise you just compound the mistake.
Well, I think it's been tough. It seems a lot easier for Mr. Snyder to move on from coaches than it is to move on from players.
Yeah.
Because during his tenure in Washington, he's had a number of guys that were older guys that he brought in that, you know, he liked a great deal and gave tremendous amount of sway to, and he, you know, it just didn't seem to work. And so you've seen all of the coaches that have come through there, and the one consistent thing is there are two consistent things: that they don't win and that there's too much dysfunction between what's going on upstairs and what's going on downstairs. And I'm talking about upstairs in the business organizational side and downstairs in the locker room side. You know, so whether that's Bruce Smith, you know, was the first one, and, you know, the concerns that Marty had and, you know, coaches that came through there at that time, that Bruce Smith was, you know, going straight to Daniel Snyder on things and, you know, the coach usurping the coach's, you know, power in the locker room. And once that happens as a coach, then you're really in trouble because you realize that you have very little control over the rudder of the ship. You're just kind of twisting in the sea.
Well, I could picture that happening when it was, you know, maybe Jay Gruden now. He was a first-year head coach in the NFL. You take the job and you're told this is the guy. This RG3's our guy. And, you know, Gruden's been quite strong on that, and he sent RG3 to the bench. But Mike Shanahan had won Super Bowls, Jeff, yet here was... here was this young quarterback kind of usurping him and going straight to ownership. I mean, it just became a mess right from the get-go.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's not been – I mean, that was when Marty was there. That was when Spurrier was there. That was when all of the – I mean, it's been that situation. You know, Jim Zorn, all of the guys that have been there have had, you know, little flashes of success, and you think maybe now they're just about ready to, you know, turn it. And then all of a sudden there would be some sort of new drama. And, you know, again – It's unfortunate because that's an old, very, very traditional organization with a tremendous fan base in the D.C. area. And, you know, it's frustrating, I'm sure, for their fans because they just – it just can't seem to everybody get everybody on the same page in the building. And, you know, like I said, when an owner has that much say – and again, I understand the fact that they own the team, they sign the checks, they have the ability. That is the way it works. But it seems to me that the good organizations, the ones that are historical over time, well run, they let the football people do the football and they take care of the other things. And that's, again, like I say, that's not been the case in Washington. And, you know, it's that's not just from reading a newspaper. That's from me talking to a number of guys who've played or coached there.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Washington, like D.C., you know, enjoyed working in the organization. They do things first class. You know, they've got great facilities, all that. But it's just the other stuff that weighs on you. And, you know, I would really be interested to see Gruden's contract and see what's in there about his ability to control player personnel, which he, you know, if his agent was smart, and, you know, it's tough sometimes you don't have the power when you're taking that first head job. You want that opportunity. But the guys that have the good agents, those agents really work hard to make sure that you have say over your future. Because, like, you know, it's like Bill Parcells said one time, you know, if I'm going to cook the meal, I want to buy the groceries.
Absolutely, Jeff. You and I have pretty good contacts in the NFL, but I don't think we're getting that contract anytime soon to look at it. And we might date ourselves here because who knows what's going to happen in the next few days? But. Do they completely cut ties with RG3? I mean, would that be less of a headache than having him sitting on the bench behind Kirk Cousins?
Well, I think that's going to be a really interesting thing to see play out. But you just mentioned it. I mean, how do you cut ties with a guy you just paid that much money to?
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's all of those things that we as fans sometimes don't, you know, you say, why are they cutting this guy? Or why don't they go get this guy? Or what, you know, when you start dealing with those salary cap numbers and, you know, how that all impacts your roster, that's why so many of these young, watching the preseason games, you see all these young players that are going to make it in the NFL. And, you know, be very frank with you, the biggest reason they're making it is they're cheap. They're going to be guys that the lower, you know, lower third of the roster that are all making minimum salary, so you can have, you know, those $16 million contracts.
Oh, you used to see it years ago, Jeff, when there was no salary cap in place. The lower third of your roster could be 7 or 8 year veterans who could play special teams and be a nice backup. Now, if you're not making an impact as a starter and becoming a special team star by year 3 or 4, then why would they not go with a first year player?
Yeah, and I'm watching the Packer game last night thinking about that very same thing. I'm watching Chris Banjo, who played for me. I recruited to Hawaii, and then we took to SMU with me, and, you know, backup safety and special teams star for the Packers. And Chris is in that same boat now. I think he's the third or fourth year player and, you know, hasn't cracked the lineup. He's not going to beat, you know, Dix out, or he's not going to beat Micah Hyde out or any of those guys. But he is a very good special teams player. But at some point, because of the way salaries are structured and your contracts are structured, they have to pay you a minimum salary each year. It gets higher and higher. Well, Chris now, if he's up in that $600,000-$700,000 a year range, he's going to start to be expensive for a special teams guy. They'll look at that and say, can we go out and get another guy, another Chris Banjo at minimum, which is like $480,000, I think, and, you know, save that extra, you know, save that on the cap and put it into, you know, getting another star re-signed. So that's the juggling act that they go through, and that's why these preseason games for so many guys are so important, because, and this is really important for the fans to understand, the preseason games are for the players and the coaches to evaluate, you know, the players, but for the players, it's your opportunity to advertise yourself to all of the other 31 teams, all of the teams in the Canadian Football League. You know, there's only, you know, there's 32 NFL teams and 9 CFL teams, so, you know, there's 41 jobs, you know, 41 professional teams in the world. So there's only 41 places you can be a professional football player. And if you're in Green Bay and you're getting, quote, garbage reps in the fourth quarter of a preseason game, you're playing as hard as you can play because you know that that tape's going to travel. And that's your opportunity to advertise yourself. And we say it to the players all the time. You are what you put on tape.
Yeah. And that's a classic example of what's probably happening in Buffalo, because Tyrod Taylor has no NFL starts to his name, but he's been named as the starter for the new season, Jeff. So that's because of some exciting displays in the preseason and through the offseason. But there's EJ Manuel, who was a 16th overall pick just a few years ago. He probably is putting work on tape, because if they've got Matt Cassel as a veteran backup behind Tyrod Taylor, that probably does put EJ Manuel on the trading block.
Well, I think it you know, that was there was a lot of speculation about that, because Rex made the decision to start EJ in the third preseason game.
Yeah.
And he had started Tyrod one and Cassel one, and then gave you know, EJ the third one. And, you know, all of the word from the people that have been around Buffalo's training camp was that it was really a two-horse race between Cassel and Tyrod Taylor, and that EJ was going to be the third. And when Rex made that decision, a lot of people made that point, that this is for EJ to put himself on tape and to showcase him, and for the Bills, frankly, to showcase him for a possible trade. Mm. Now, again, that's the reality of preseason football, and for every player, not just for EJ Manuel, but for every player, that's your best opportunity to put your best foot forward. And there may be a situation where, you know, in this game, one injury and a team's looking for a starting quarterback, and he played extremely well in the quarter that he had an opportunity to play. So he's taking care of what he can take care of. Now it's up to the Bills to make a decision about what they want to do, you know, with that quarterback thing. And it's really been interesting, Neil, because it looks like it's going to be Tyrod Taylor, the tremendously gifted athlete that out of Virginia Tech that, you know, kind of languished in Baltimore for, you know, behind Flacco. And, you know, the word when the Bills got him was that Baltimore was concerned that he hadn't continued to develop his skills. But boy, oh boy, he seems to have found a home in that Buffalo offense.
Is he one of those that's going to excite in the games, Jeff? Because I did see all three of these quarterbacks in training camp, and none were impressive. I mean, EJ Manuel was really struggling with accuracy. Tyrod Taylor kind of blew hot and cold. And with Cassel, I think we all know what they get. But it has been in the preseason that Taylor has turned some heads. Now, there's that inexperience that's going to be there. But maybe Rex, you know, he dabbled with Tim Tebow for a while, didn't he? So I think maybe that dual threat quarterback is something that Rex likes.
I think he likes the fact. I think there are a lot of defensive coordinators that like those kinds of, or guys that are defensive coaches who like those kinds of quarterbacks, because they know how hard they are to defend for them. You know, because when you defend Matt Cassel, you're defending the running game, but not the quarterback in the running game, and you defend, you know, him in the pocket. When you've got to defend a Tyrod Taylor, you've got to defend him in the running game, as a part of that zone read scheme and all the things he can do with his feet, because he made some tremendous plays. You saw the touchdown the other day in the preseason game. It was an amazing play. Mm. And he can also get out on the edge, and he's, you know, got a big arm. So, you know, the question will be whether he's, and this is, I'm always cautionary about preseason games, Neil, because you're not seeing the same defenses that you're going to see in the regular season. And when I say defense, you may see the same personnel, but I've watched the Steelers, and I've watched the Steelers very close through training camp, and the Steelers just got ran into a buzzsaw in Buffalo the other day, and Buffalo didn't have any of their wide receivers, and it looked like the Steelers were old and slow. And but I'm going to tell you something. You wait and see what happens when you get to the regular season, because now all of the stuff comes. All of the blitzes come. All of the looks come. All of the stuff that, you know, teams are not going to show during preseason. So you got to be a particularly with the quarterback, you got to be a little bit cautionary about saying, wow, he's ready to become a starter, because he's going to see a whole different load of things when it gets to be the games that matter.
Yeah, Jeff, this is old news, but I feel like I haven't spoken to you for ages anyway. You just mentioned about quarterbacks running and being part of that read option. When I was in America, there was a lot made of Terrell Suggs' hit on Sam Bradford in what looked like a zone read type of play. What's your thought on that? I mean, do you think that, you know, defensive players are entitled to hit a quarterback if the quarterback's going to pretend he's still got the football?
I'm going to tell you something. That is a really a hot topic right now, because the defensive coaches are saying, well, you expose that guy to those hits, then, you know, it's your problem, not our problem. And, you know, they've made it so hard on defensive players anyway. Now you're going to they want you to say, well, you can't hit them low when they're running the zone read, or you can't hit them in a certain area when they're, how in the world is a defensive player supposed to know whether it's play action or the zone read?
Yeah.
And it's the, you know, whether he hands the ball or gives the ball is based upon the reaction of the defense. So now what is you know, what do you got to do? Stand there and watch until they make the decision? I just think it's almost impossible for them to come up with. And I heard Jeff Fisher say this the other day. He doesn't anticipate any changes in the rules relative to the zone replay, but I know Chip would like to see it changed. And I think that's one of those areas is that they're just going to have to live with it. And, you know, we watched really closely yesterday some preseason film. And as I'm watching the preseason film, you know, you see the court. They really dabble with it. The only team that really runs it and really runs it like college teams run it is the Eagles.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's you see Sam Bradford and how frail he is and how injury prone he's been. I just go, man, oh man, Chip, wee. But, you know, they're gonna do their thing because it's their thing.
Okay, Jeff, let's move on to some of the injuries that have taken place during the preseason then. And it's not all in preseason games, actually. A lot of this has been during training camp action. Washington outside linebacker Junior Gallette gone for the season with an Achilles. Again, another Achilles injury. Then a spate of ACLs. Carolina wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin gone for the year. Packers wide receiver Jordy Nelson gone for the year. Dolphins safety Lewis Delmas, ACL, gone for the year. Cowboys cornerback Orlando Scandrick, again an ACL, gone for the year. Steelers center Marquise Pouncey's got an ankle injury. They think it might be about 10 weeks. Julius Thomas still sidelined with a finger injury for the Jags. May now need surgery and might be out until week 4 at the earliest. We already know Arian Foster is going to miss some time with the Texans. Jeff, is this just the norm?
Well, you know, it's really tough when you have those, when you get that out for the season report. You know, and those ACLs, those Achilles tendons, you know. It may be as information, you know, we get so much more information now than we ever did in the past. I think we're maybe more aware of all these situations than we were in the past, but there's just too many guys that are going to be gone from their teams for a whole year. You know, you think about the Patriots and, you know, James Devlin breaks his leg, and you say, well, that's just a fullback, you can get another one of those guys, but everybody has a role, everybody has a, you know, a part of the team that they're critical about, whether it's a special teams player or a situational running back on the goal line or whatever it is. And you just can't lose guys, and you know, because it's hard to find backups, it's hard to find good backups, you know, so I'm looking at the Jets list, and it's unbelievable how long that thing is. You know, here you go, your new coach in a new situation, trying to, you know, create a new culture, you know, you look at your injury list, and you got guys. How do you evaluate them if they're not on the field? How do you coach them if they're not on the field? You can't coach them in the training room, and you know, so. It's tough. You know, you're Todd Bowles, you're looking at this injury list, and it's just like, man, oh, man, can we even have practice today?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Jets injury list took the injury list and the culture took a blow with the Geno Smith one, didn't it, Jeff? I mean,
you know, I mean, and that one's just, like, ridiculous. I mean, you lose a quarterback because he gets his jaw broken in a fight in the locker room over a $600, $600 that he owed another player, you just shake your head and you go, man, oh man, oh man. And, you know, so it's one of those deals where I'm sure Todd Bowles got the news and shut his eyes and said, sometimes be careful what you wish for. This head coaching stuff. Because it all comes back on you. I mean, everything. You know, Jerry McCurley's concussion and all this stuff. And it's just every day you look at this. And I know what happens. The trainer, everybody talks about the Turk. Well, to the coaches during training camp and even during the game, when the trainer walks up to you, very rarely good news.
Right.
So I told our trainer the other night, we just got machine gunned in the game, right? We lost like three or four guys. And I was patching together special teams with what we had left. And our trainer walked over to, I said, Carly, get away from me. I don't want to hear it again. Sometimes it's better to not know.
Exactly. I mean, I know. We're kind of joking about it a little bit, but I did raise the Geno Smith leadership stuff, didn't I, in June? And I just think I don't think it's all his fault, but he's certainly played a role in this injury himself. I mean, Darrelle Revis came out and said that both parties were to blame. So there's definitely something there with Geno Smith. Jeff, what about this belief then? You hear it said all the time, old school players, retired players are always saying, oh, well, they don't do enough in camp anymore. And I mean, is that why we see? I don't personally buy it. But you're a coach. You're on the field. You tell me how. Because
I don't believe that. I really think that now, obviously, compared to the old camps that they used to have, were two a day practices and pads both practices and banging the heck out of one another. It's amazing that anybody survived. Mm. But I still think that they get an awful lot of football in, and they get an awful lot of football in, frankly, in the in the OTAs and the mini camps and all those other things. It's just the nature of the game. These are big human beings that travel extremely, extremely high rate of speed, and the collisions are very intense, and your body's put in a tremendously stressful, positions during training camp and during playing the game. So it's a reality that we face, and everybody's working all the time to mitigate these things. I mean, they monitor players so closely now, and we actually have we've gone to the system that the Eagles use, where our players actually have electronic monitoring devices underneath their pads in both games and practice, so that we can get a database of how much they actually do and what their heart rate is during the course of practice, what drills are particularly stressful on them, all those things. And at the end of practice, you'll see them. They take their pads off, and then they take this little computer thing out of their the t-shirts that they wear underneath their pads, and turn it into the equipment guy, who then takes it to the analytics guy, who evaluates all the information. And so they're doing as much as they can possibly do. The Eagles have that wristband that they wear that can tell them how much a player sleeps every night, and when he goes to bed, and all those other things. So it's the medical situation is better than it's ever been. The fact of the matter is, it's that kind of game, and that's going to be a reality as long as we play it.
How do you address your players when you stood up in front of the meeting room then, Jeff? You've just lost a Jordy Nelson for the year. There goes 98 catches and 1,500 yards. Do you preach that next man up philosophy? Do you tell players to be careful, or do you say they've got to go out and play their normal game? How do you approach it?
Well, we had a situation like that, in the game this past weekend. We lost Eric Norwood, who is a tremendous pass rusher that we got from the Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. He was injured to start the season. He came back and he's played five games, had seven sacks. I mean, he's really a good football player. And he got, he got backside cut off on a run play and got his MCL torn and tried to play the entire game with a torn. It was one of the most courageous things I've ever seen. The guy was amazing. But at the end of the day, we've now lost him for probably 6 to 8 weeks. And you have to, first of all, to me, you celebrate the fact the guy was that tough to go out and do that and point that out to his teammates, what he was willing to do to sacrifice for his team, and then recognize that next player in the depth chart has got to step up now, and it's his time. And everybody gets an opportunity at some point. You don't know when it's going to come. You don't know how it's going to come, but it's going to come, and now it's your time, and we need you. You have to perform.
Mm. Anything else to catch your eye in the preseason, Jeff? I mean, just stuff I was looking at. I watched the Vikings-Cowboys game over the weekend. I thought Teddy Bridgewater looked outstanding. He went 7-for-7 in that game. Cordarrelle Patterson had a 107-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. He might still be troubled as a receiver, but he's a special teams threat. I watched Miami against Atlanta. Tannehill's just looked really good all preseason. So those are the things that have kind of caught my eye. What things have caught your eye in the preseason? I also wanted to ask you about the extra point moving back. Has it made a major difference?
I'm going to tell you something. I've watched the Steelers very, very close.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the fact that LeBeau's not there now and new coordinator. And what I saw in preseason really was a little bit of a surprise to me. I saw the Steelers doing more four down things than I've ever seen them do.
Mm-hmm. Four down linemen, you mean?
Yeah, four down linemen, because they've historically been a 3-4 team under LeBeau, his own blitz team.
Yep.
But I saw much more, they played a lot in the game I watched, the Hall of Fame game against Minnesota. I saw an awful lot of what we call Tampa 2 zone.
Yep.
And that is a real departure for the Steelers. And I thought about it, and then it made sense to me. Mike Tomlin's a defensive coach. Mike Tomlin's background is with Tony Dungy. I'm sure that was one of the things that, you know, there was rumored to be some friction between Tomlin and LeBeau. Mm. And that little bit of scheme change that you've seen in preseason, I'm sure, is Mike exerting more influence in the defensive meeting room. And so it will be interesting to see how that plays out. I thought Minnesota had a really good preseason. I think that's a team that people better watch out for. I've seen the Cardinals. They look, you know, again, I really am impressed with them. I think they're really well coached. I think they play hard. They're physical. So I thought they had a good preseason. I agree with you on the Dolphins. The Dolphins, to me, are that team that, you know, is, if there's anybody that's going to shake, because of the quarterbacking, right, if there's anybody that's going to shake that AFC East title away from New England, it could be, you know, the Dolphins if they stay healthy and continue to grow. They seem to have gotten over some of the internal strife that they and drama that they, you know, have had during the Philbin years. And I think the Bills are going to be dangerous. The Bills are going to be a nasty, nasty team. And it was interesting watching the Bills Steelers game the other day. I mean, that Bills defense, they are not going to back down from anybody.
Oh,
and
no.
It was, you know, it was chippy. It was as chippy as a playoff game. and it was just the third preseason game. And, you know, the guy standing on the sideline, you know, Rex was with the white T-shirt sticking out of his Bills sweater vest, was really enjoying every second of it.
Well, when I went out to St. John Fisher College and interviewed some of the Bills players during training camp, I did a feature where I was stood between Marcel Darius and Jerry Hughes, and I actually made the point that I wouldn't want to be a quarterback in the NFL with those guys bearing down each side. But the minute I mentioned Rex Ryan, Jeff, their eyes just lit up. So here's a defense that was already one of the best in the NFL. It's now got even more swagger, and I think they're going to have even more aggression because they're going to feel like their coach has got their back if they be aggressive and something doesn't quite work out from time to time.
Well, that's one of the great things that Rex does, is he gets those players to believe in the system, believe in him, believe, you know, that he's going to cut them loose and let them be players. And, you know, that's what players want. They want the feeling that coach, that head coach particularly, has got their back. Now, that's been a Ryan trademark going all the way back to Buddy and his time as an assistant with the Jets when they won the World Championship, and with Namath at quarterback, and then on to Minnesota and then to Chicago and all of his stops along the trail. He's always, if you remember poignantly, that after the Bears win the 85 Super Bowl, the offensive players have Ditka up on their shoulders carrying them off the field, and the defensive guys go over and pick Buddy's big fat butt up and carry him off the field.
Two head coaches.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think that's a trademark of those Ryan coach teams, and that will continue to be. Buffalo is, as he says, we're building a bully. And, you know, you look at, they've brought in, their offensive line is playing much better than they played last year. And that's, I know it's preseason, but, you know, again, Incognito, I think, has really helped him at guard. Chantrell Henderson's playing better than he played last year, certainly at tackle. So, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to watch those Bills, too. There's a lot of football. There's a lot of really interesting things. You know, the quarterback situation with the Texans, how that's, you know, how that's going to impact that football team. And, you know, is Alfred Blue going to be able to, you know, take the load of the running game, you know, as they wait for their star to, you know, get back healthy. So there's a lot of stories around the National Football League. You know, Funchess at Carolina, the young receiver out of Michigan that looks so good and, you know, has been battling a hamstring lately. What's, you know, how much is he going to be able to impact that throwing game in Carolina? Because Carolina's going to play good defense, you know that.
Any thoughts on the extra point moving back? I know Blair Walsh of Minnesota probably doesn't like it too much. He struggled early on.
I don't think Hartley likes it either. I think he pulled his hamstring kicking an extra point.
And now
Josh
Scobie has gone from Jacksonville to Pittsburgh for a sixth-round draft pick. So that's, Josh, who was the 11 years with Jacksonville, their all-time leading point scorer, over 1,000 points. He's now a Pittsburgh Steeler.
I'm going to tell you a Josh Scobie story because I coached him in college, right? And he's a great guy.
He is a great guy.
We're playing Miami, and it's late in the game. And, you know, this is a Miami team with, you know, Frank Gore and, you know, they got, I can't remember the defensive back, Scripe. They were all, three of them, I think, made it NFL Hall of Famers. And DJ Williams at linebacker. And
Sean Taylor then at Miami?
Yeah, Sean Taylor was in that bunch. And the linebacker from New Orleans, Vilma, was there. Yeah. I mean, this is a great Miami team, right? And we're playing them. And we finally score late in the game. And he goes, Scobes goes out to kick off. And he has a big, big leg. We're playing at the Independence Bowl in Shreveport. And the first time he kicks off to open the game, he puts it about six rows back in the bleachers, in the back of the end zone. And so he's going to show everybody how strong his leg is the second one. And they put a freshman back there to return. And the kid's name was Devin Hester. And Scobes hit a ball that never got more than 6 feet off the ground. I mean, it was a bullet. He hit it. But he got too fat on the ball, and it was like a line shot. And it went straight back, and it hit Hester in the chest, and almost, I must have hurt him as he hit it so hard. But I'm going to tell you what, that ball came back as fast as it went down. Hester got that ball, and Scobie had to tackle him on the sideline. But I remember when Josh came over the sideline, I said, "That's a nice play." He goes, "Coach, do you see how fast that guy was?" And we were just getting, the world came to know Devin Hester that day.
I've always loved Josh. I've done a lot of filming with Josh. Every time I've been out to Jacksonville, and I looked after him a couple of times when he came over here to London. There's no delusions of grandeur with Josh Scobie. One time we did a locker room tour around Jacksonville, and he was like, "This is where I sit." And let's be honest, I sit here quite a lot because I don't really have a lot to do. The other players are in real meetings and they're doing real practice. He never hid from the fact that he was enjoying the life of Riley as a kicker in the NFL.
Yeah, he's a great guy. A great, great guy. And I tell you what, don't ever get on the golf course with him if you got dollars in your pocket, because he'll get into your wallet pretty good.
Yeah, definitely a keen golfer. All right, let's take some questions from the mailbag then. First one from Andrew Dennett, who says, "How much does the injury to Jordy Nelson affect the Packers' Super Bowl chances?" So, Jeff, I gave you the numbers earlier: 98 catches, 1,500 yards. But now the Packers are going to have to lean on a rookie in Ty Montgomery and a guy who they were already calling the MVP of their offseason, Devontae Adams, who was a first-round pick last year, who came on a big playoff game, didn't he? I think against Dallas we saw a big playoff game. So has this affected their Super Bowl chances?
Well, I think it's going to certainly impact it. And you know, when I watch the game, I'm watching the game last night, and I see Cobb land on his shoulder, and they cart him off, and I'm going, oh, my goodness. Yep. That one would have really hurt him. But, you know, the rapport that Jordy Nelson and Aaron Rodgers has, you're not going to replace that in one, you know, in a week or, you know, in a half a season. Obviously, Adams and Montgomery are both very talented players, and the Packers like them a lot. And, you know, Cobb's going to probably have to take on more of a role as you go through it. And Lacy, who may, the running game, they may, you know, run the football a little bit more. The Packers will find a way. But what I think is interesting, and it was listening, I was listening to Devontae Adams talk about his relationship with Aaron Rodgers, and it went back to something that you had told me about Aaron Rodgers when you visited out there about he puts the receivers in those contested ball situations in practice and in preseason, those 50-50 balls, because he wants to see if that guy can deliver for him. And Davante Adams was talking about that last night, about how he feels that he's gained Aaron Rodgers' confidence now because they've been through enough of those 50-50 ball situations, those contested ball situations, both in practice and the preseason games, that, you know, he'll turn the ball there. Because what happens in a game is the quarterbacks are always going to go to the read if it's open. But if it's not, if they're unsure, they're going to try and put the ball in their, the guy that they have the most confidence in, the guy that they think can go make a play for him. And that's what Jordy Nelson had with Aaron Rodgers. So somebody else, whether it's Davante Adams or Ty Montgomery or Cobb or whoever, is going to have to become that guy. And that's going to take a little time.
All right, here's a question from Twitter from some bloke who says, how many quarterbacks will be having nightmares about Khalil Mack? So the Oakland Raiders pass rusher, Jeff, he's going into his second season, had a big game the other night against the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, I've said it before, his get-off is incredible, but he looks to have added a few more moves to his game as well.
Yeah, he's really grown. And here's a kid that we followed since I went down and watched his pro day at the University of Buffalo a couple of years ago. And there weren't a lot of people really knew much about him. And, you know, I can remember you and I having the discussion about how much I thought that kid had a chance to be the rookie of the year on defense.
Yeah.
And, if he was playing on a better football team, he might have been. This guy has just incredible ability. He's one of those defensive coordinator's dreams because you can do so much with him. He can put his hand on the ground and rush off the edge. He can play linebacker. He can go inside. He can cover. He can blitz. He can do everything that you ask a guy to do. And what sold me on Khalil Mack was when I watched his college tape. He's playing against Ohio State. Now he's at the University of Buffalo and they're playing in the, you know, in the big house. I mean, in the horseshoe, the big horseshoe at Ohio State, and there's 100,000 people in there, and, you know, they got no chance. I mean, they're probably maybe three kids on the Buffalo team that would have even taken a visit to Ohio State, much less got a scholarship at Ohio State. And he almost single-handedly kept them in the game. I mean, he was unbelievable. And I said to myself, that kid right there has a chance to be somebody really special. And then I went down and watched his pro day workout and kind of really listened to him. I watched Joey Porter was there from the Steelers and working him out, and I got a chance to be a part of that workout. And I'm going to tell you something, he has that look in his eye. He's eager. He wants to be a player. There was no arrogance, none of that. None of that about him, and you really root for a guy like that.
Yeah, there certainly is no arrogance with him, and certainly a great work ethic. I've been around him. The first time was in minicamp a year ago in June, and he absolutely caught the eye, like I've said before, just like he was shot out of a cannon. But then spending quite a bit of time with him, and I caught up with him at Super Bowl. I've seen him a couple of times when he was over in London. Great work ethic, very down to earth, and he's going to continue to grow. Here's a question from Adam Nichols, who says, who is Neil's man crush for 2015? It has been Andrew Luck since he entered the NFL. Does he still win the day? Well, Adam, it's probably still going to be Andrew. You know, the man crush list is based on, you know, spending time with the guys and getting to know them, because as I've said before, there are many, many great people who work and play in the NFL. So, you know, I have to have met them and spent some time with them to be on the man crush list. So I'd say Andrew's still top. I do think Aaron Rodgers is still quite high up there. And a new addition to the man crush list for this year is Jarvis Landry of the Miami Dolphins. I think he's going to have a really good year for the Dolphins. Player I'm looking forward to seeing who's I've never met, who might make his way onto the list one day, is Todd Gurley of the Rams. I think he could be a good running back. So there's my man crush list. Jeff, here's one for you, actually, just to finish off, from Matt Morrissey, who says, with the cuts happening around the NFL, can Jeff tell us any good stories about the Turk, especially with players getting cut this week?
Yeah, I'll tell you one. And it's a guy that played 9 years, I think it was, in the NFL. And I had him, and I traded to get him. His name's Nick Ferguson. Nick was a Pro Bowl alternate when he was with the Broncos as a safety. He and John Lynch were the two safeties in Denver. An amazing story, an amazing kid, NFL Europe kid. But I cut him. And I cut him. And you bring him in, especially Nick, because he's a great kid, and I traded to get him, and he was a salary cap casualty. We couldn't keep him under the salary that he had. So, the day comes, and the Turk goes to fetch him and say, bring your playbook, go see the head coach. And he sits across the desk from me, and when you're cutting a player, it's tough. So I don't like to sit behind my desk. I like to come around so that you're actually, there's nothing separating the two of you.
Yep.
And I said to Nick, I said, Nick, we're going to have to let you go. And he looked at me and like he didn't know what I was saying. I said, we've got to move on and have a tough decision, but it's a decision I have to make. And he looked at me and said, you're making a mistake. And I said, well, Nick, I may be making a mistake, but it's a mistake I've got to make. And he said, I'm not leaving. I said, what? He said, I'm not leaving. And I said, well, Nick, you don't understand. You're not working here anymore, right? Do you understand that we're cutting you? And he goes, well, I'm not leaving because you're making a mistake. And I said, here's the way it works, Nick. You're in Canada. You're not a professional athlete anymore, so you have to go back to the United States. And I said, call Jack Riel, your agent, and tell him, you're looking for work, and I'll be glad to help you in any way I can help you. He said, I'm not leaving. I said, so actually what happened, I'll get to the cut to the story. He convinced me to allow him to stay. I had an extra room at my house. I said, I'll give you 1 week. You can stay at my house, and you can come to the facility and work out while we're on the practice field, but you can't be around, it's against the rules for you to be around the players.
Yeah.
And so he would ride my bike from, because he didn't have a car, from my house to the practice facility, and we would practice, and I would see him sitting up in the stands. Now, imagine how humiliating that is for an athlete who was a starter the year before. We would go into meetings, he would go into the weight room, and we go play a game, and lo and behold, the kid who replaced him pulls a hamstring. So I call him in, and I say, Nick, we'd like to re-sign you. And he goes, see, I told you. And then there's also one, I remember being in a camp once, and I won't say where and who the player was, but the guy had some serious anger management issue, and so the head coach called the police, called the security guy to sit in his office when he cut the kid, and then the kid went out with a baseball bat, his shoes or whatever, and started breaking windows in the parking lot of the coach's car. So those are my two Turk stories.
I think it's very charitable that you came around the desk and sat next to them, Jeff, because then if you got the angry guy like you've just described, he could get a good clean swing at you. Very good of you.
That might have been the nice thing to do. It probably wasn't a very smart thing to do.
No, take one for the team. All right, Jeff, so we're out of time. I just want to mention, actually, that this weekend, Saturday, September the 5th, 2:30 p.m. kickoff at Allianz Park in London, is the Brit Bowl final between the London Warriors and the London Blitz. Two great organisations there going head-to-head. So, Jeff, that's always a fun weekend when you see these guys that play for fun going at it to win a national championship.
I think it's fantastic, and those two organizations have really done well, and it seems like they continually up the bar, to the coaches and players and everybody involved in Brit Bowl and the people that put it on, it's a tremendous event. Get out there and see what these young athletes can do, because, it's amazing. You may be watching somebody that's going to play in the NFL one day.
Yeah, Efe Abada played in that very game last year in the championship game. He's now in the NFL with the Dallas Cowboys, so it could be happening. That's Saturday, September the 5th, 2:30 p.m. Jeff, it's good to be back. Good to speak to you, and we're almost there. We're 1 week away. Next season, we can preview the 2015 NFL season.
Let's do it, brother.
All right.
Look forward to it.
All right, so until next week, this has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Until next week, when we're going to look ahead to that big season kickoff, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.